This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Housewives Archives, a podcast where we discuss in great depth all things Real Housewives. My name's Ellie Nunn, and if he was on a TV show, he'd probably have to have subtitles put underneath him. I don't understand what he's saying. It's my co-host, James Evans.
Hello.
Hello, Ellie. She's fake. She's plastic, not fantastic. Just one of the most horrible co-hosts I've ever had to deal with in my entire life.
It's like that Lisa Vanderpump thing where it's weird because it just doesn't sound how British people sound. But like my boyfriend she's so posh, she sounds like she's drunk all the time.
Yeah.
No, I just opened a bottle of wine that I think is about 100 years old.
It is a great level of posh to be at where you're so laissez-faire. You're just constantly in a whiny state.
So much. But also her mouth doesn't really move when she talks. She just sort of draws out. So it's why it's quite hard to understand her.
That is such a lot of bollocks, darling. I just think this is the most appalling little crap I've ever had to deal with my entire life.
It's just you're absolutely barking up the wrong tree because the one thing I'm not is racist.
I am absolutely not a racist.
Oh, good fun.
So I just want to dive in straight away with a little bit of housekeeping.
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
Just because I'm happy to see you.
I'm excited. I'm happy to be here. So we had a really important message from a listener the other day, and I'd just like to read it out to you.
Okay.
It says, "Hiya, I absolutely adore the podcast. The Danielle impressions have permanently changed my vernacular. The pod has been a really important bonding experience for me and my partner, and I was wondering if you could give my partner, SJ, a birthday shout out. Their birthday is on the 27th of October. No problem if you can't. Love the podcast. Signed, Lewis from Trowbridge." I made up Trowbridge, but their name's Lewis.
Okay, you know what to do altogether.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear SJ.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Hoppa!
Yeah, habibi.
Yeah, habibi.
Happy birthday, SJ. I hope you have the most wonderful
if you sat through
day.
That, if your relationship survived that rendition of happy birthday, all power to you.
Many people would rather not have that as a birthday present.
Myself included. Please don't do it for me.
Anyway, happy birthday, SJ.
Oh, happy birthday. Bringing couples together all over the place. Including my own relationship, where this week's huge step forward was sneaking side eye to see that my boyfriend had started watching Real Housewives of DC.
Yeah.
And then he said, "These women seem the most interesting of all the ones that you watch."
Oh, really? I think that actually tracks. I think it's a good one for getting boyfriends into because it feels vaguely political and it's a one-off season. They can kind of treat it like an HBO miniseries or something. You know? So it's like prestige drama, which obviously all of the Housewives are.
It's like the West Wing. Absolutely.
Exactly. They're like lobbying. They're trying to get gay marriage passed. It's like Scandal or something.
Yeah. He then did also this week, we're watching Love is Blind, and he was like, "Of all of the conceits, this is the one I can get the most behind." And I thought, I was like, fuck you. The Traitors is amazing. I was like, how even I wouldn't choose Love is Blind over The Traitors. Come on.
Did you watch all of the different iterations of Traitors in front of him and just none of them worked?
I certainly... Oh, no. Not in front of him. Privately. By myself.
Because I think the UK one is quite emotional. I could see how maybe that's a bit off-putting, but Australian Traitors...
There's lots of gender stereotyping happening here. I could see that he wouldn't like it because it's emotional.
But there's...
Yeah, no, he really liked Real Housewives of DC because it's really political.
Those are mad politics.
God, I thought I got away with not getting cancelled last week by Big Lime, and now, oh.
Absolutely not.
Oh God, I'm mortified.
I have had the best time watching Real Housewives of DC. I loved it. You were right.
I'm so glad. I'm always terrified. It's the same with Vancouver. I was terrified you'd be like, James, I'm 4 episodes in. This is fucking boring. I don't know what to talk about.
Nope, I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of love that it's a one-off season.
Yeah.
And that it's its own like piece of art. Thank God there was a reunion at the end. I was scared there wasn't going to be. I loved how different it was to any other series. And the political thing, I just found it hilarious how I live in the same city as like the royals, but I don't like talk about the royals all the time. I don't know. It's not a good example, but it is crazy how much all they wanted to talk about was their connections to people in politics.
Completely. Of which they have none.
None. It was extraordinary.
Probably partly why the show wasn't very successful. It really doesn't live up to the high expectations of its premise, where
absolutely.
Obviously every housewife city feels like it has to have a theme, and DC's is obviously going to be political, and there's all that talk about like, if you want to make it in this town, you've got to have power or proximity to power. You'd be forgiven for going into this show thinking they'd all be senators' wives or something, but
oh, absolutely.
Obviously anyone who actually has any power in DC is not in their right mind going to sign up for this show. It's so fucking funny.
They also have some of the crappest taglines of, it's that one where it's like, of a time, I couldn't tell you what any of them were apart from Kat being like, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah, they're all like Carl Richards level taglines of like, DC's my town and I thrive in it.
The end. Nothing clever about that.
I grew up in this town.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I live in DC. That's nice.
Also, because they're constantly talking about politics all the time, even though they have no relation to the political arena whatsoever, it also does have that unfortunate side effect where it makes the show feel incredibly dated, more so than perhaps any other Housewives city.
Unbelievably.
It is such a time capsule of the early Obama administration.
It's incredible.
It's quite sweet in a way. There's a lot of talk about like, what an exciting time this is, and there's a lot of bipartisan cooperation, and they're getting gay marriage passed, and it's like, no, a simpler time.
Honestly.
Who knew how things... We were all so happy then.
I'd like them to come back to Real Housewives of DC now in a post-Trump. Or even if they'd filmed during Trump, whatever. Just this kind of like apocalyptic wasteland of Washington. Kind of post-insurrection. Where you're right, there's a kind of naivety. But also just like a glorious lack of self-awareness around things like race. And
oh my
it's
God.
Kind of gorgeous to see them have no sense of the fact that they're on television. And it's amazing because it's not like with Real Housewives of New York where Ebony came in and, you know, was very much there to educate people. And like with the premise, what's so amazing about Stacey is she's so intelligent about it, but like genuinely, oh, I'm sort of trying to see the best in everyone. But that was quite shocking what that person said or kind of felt. Like there's no agenda to it.
Yeah.
It's just a really amazing actual snippet of what I imagine race relations are quite like in sort of suburban Washington. Just a load of like rich white ladies who really think of themselves as like very forward thinking.
I have experienced reverse racism. I grew up in the South and it was hard.
Exactly. I grew up in the South and I have black friends. So, you know, we have this one black gay friend who makes us liberal.
I know that we have different hair, but we need to
integrate.
Come on, guys.
We got it. Great. Come on.
No, Stacey deserved an award for, she had the patience of a saint to sit there and quietly put up with some of that bullshit.
Exactly. But then what I also love about it is it's one of those things where just as you're like, wow, she and her amazing husband really are the kind of martyrs of DC. We have this amazing clip of her and her husband basically saying that they don't believe in gay marriage and being I just don't think that that should be for anything other than a man and woman. And you're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Again, another totally unselfconscious look into how people feel.
Stacey is a good example, isn't she, of what we've said before, of not picking one housewife and going, oh, they seem nice and normal and my values align with them. I'm just going to follow their lead, because you never know when they're going to surprise you with a little hot take like that.
Literally.
I will give her a bit of leeway because I feel like, again, that's why it feels so dated. I think we do forget how much times have changed and that actually in 2009, that was a perfectly legitimate take for Democrats to have. Like, I don't even think Obama was pro-gay marriage at that point. Like, I think this whole idea idea of equal but separate was very much a mainstream view to take.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so fascinating looking back on it. And it is extraordinary to think the speed of change has been so tremendous, and it's an amazing thing. But sometimes I do think our generation, not that we shouldn't, you know, always keep pushing for change, but forget how long things took to change. And I'm certainly someone who can be very impatient to see results when actually there's something kind of extraordinary in the senator who's advocating for gay marriage on the show. Yeah. And he keeps saying, you have to be patient. You have to appeal to, there's no point doing an echo chamber. You have to appeal to the people who aren't going to understand it and help take time to get them to understand. And I thought, you know what? There's a lot of wisdom in that for our generation of like proper implemented change, long-term change comes from educating people and trying to understand where people's prejudice comes from, rather than trying to shame people into a different way of thinking, which actually tends to just like polarize societies and get people frustrated. It was very, very, very fascinating, the whole thing.
It is. And it's why, kind of in a way, I find DC so intriguing, because for something that had such a big diplomatic scandal that created international headlines, it's been completely and utterly disregarded by Bravo and essentially lost to time. In the US, you cannot stream DC for love nor money. It's incredibly hard to find.
Wow.
I had to shell out $19.99 to watch the whole season on some weird app on my TV. I was very disappointed to read Not All Diamonds and Rosé and see that they devoted maybe like 2.5 pages to the whole of DC, and they interviewed one housewife. It was probably Mary, someone really boring.
Yeah.
And I get that crashing the White House is a big deal, and it was a huge pain in the ass for Bravo. But it's like they're so embarrassed by it to this day that they're determined to erase it from history and pretend that it never existed, which is so interesting because in so many ways, it was such a forward-thinking show. Such an intelligent housewife show. It had many firsts. Again, we made such a big deal of the fact that Ebony joined the cast in New York, or Garcelle was the first black housewife on Beverly Hills. Stacey was like a pioneer. She was there at the forefront, totally, having to deal with this bullshit by herself with grace. And I would argue as well, later on when we talk about the White House crashing, it was probably the first instance truly of the Real Housewives becoming meta-theatrical and acknowledging itself as a show. And how it kind of blurred the lines. So it's interesting now to see it completely forgotten to history.
I also wonder if it was one of the first examples, I'm not sure where it comes in the canon compared to New Jersey and things like that, but to have a couple so clearly overcompensating for some kind of financial mess.
Yeah.
And not realize how cottoned onto that the show would be. And this amazing veneer on top that ends up just reading as completely mental, but that in their head will be very aspirational, because that's now become a bit of a trope of Real Housewives. And I feel like there's a lot of examples of Real Housewives and their partners being caught up in fraud or in sort of various scandals. I mean, like Jen Shah, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's not surprising anymore, but actually on this series, it's kind of incredible. It's so organic and it's so bonkers.
It's quite sweet in a way, the Salahi's brand of con artistry, because they are, on the one hand, so outrageous with it. They are such shameless, blatant liars, but also they just get their money they don't get their money. They just don't pay for stuff and they just live on credit, which is very innocent compared to today's times where corruption. It's like you get your money by scamming old people or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's so true.
It's like, oh, yeah. Okay.
One of my favorite, can we just talk about the Salahis?
Yeah.
I'm just obsessed. I don't even know where to start.
Do you want to start with the Salahis, or do you want to work your way up to them?
No, okay. I want to start with them, because I feel like it's one of those things where everything we talk about is just going to come back to them.
Mm-hmm.
I just have so many favorite moments. The broken down vineyard that they have to get security to protect them from his mother is one of my favorite moments of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so particular, the partner, and this whole thing of their kind of like fear or their demonization of his mother as this like monster they have to like protect themselves with the police from constantly just really makes me laugh. As it's just not what you expect. The way it's dropped, you're like, hang on, what? Did he just say from his mum?
Right. I'm going to come back to this point again and again when I talk about the Salahis, but they have such a Danielle Staub-esque quality to them.
It's amazing, as if she's going to assassinate
them. The paranoia. Yeah, they have secret security surrounding them because of some old lady who's just pissed off that her son's run the family business into the ground. It's incredible. And it's... I would honestly say not since Danielle Staub has one housewife in the form of Mikkel so clearly carried a season on her back, and similarly from Exile, where like from the get-go, everyone just despises them, refuses to film with them.
Very similar vibes.
As a result, they're forced to kind of like hang out with these shady side characters. So say if Danielle has her Danny Provenzano, Mikkel has her Tarek Salahi. They're just such a perfect villainous duo in a way that can only exist for one season. They kind of remind me of Jim and Amber from that one mad season New Jersey, where it's like they gave us the perfect amount of villainy that it would have been unreasonable to have expected them to stick around any longer. And I think it's probably safe to say that they were the only reason why DC was so good, but paradoxically also the reason why DC was cancelled. So it's just... It was like a real lightning in a bottle moment.
But also those people are very often not sustainable. And that's what's so great, is they were like there for the perfect length of time, because any more and they'd actually have to deal with consequences, or like where we just had them in like the perfect number of lies for nothing, with no accountability at any point. And it's just glorious. It's so, I love, that's it.
Yeah. There's almost, when we first meet Mikkel though, there's almost a bit of a Kyle and Camille thing going on, where all the women, it's established that they all hate Mikkel, but there must be some sort of meta reason for why they do, because they don't directly address it on camera because it would break the fourth wall. Otherwise, it just doesn't make sense why they would all agree to do a show with someone that they hate previously, but then refuse to film with her. Like, I don't know who Linda thinks that she is. Like, she's not a Teresa Giudice, but the fact that she could, like, refuse to film a single scene with Mikkel. I think she does one scene with them at a party altogether where she sort of concerned trolls her about her eating. But there's just a lot
No, it's the... No, she does the one scene where Mikkel says to her, don't talk about me, about my eating. But yes, you're right. That, yeah, it is interesting to come in on that level of, it's not like they've done a few seasons and then that's how you get to grow, like Linda grows to be like Elisa Vanderpump, and then you get to have the power to say, I don't want to.
Right.
So it feels like that order is already established and that kind of hierarchy, and the team just come in. It's like they're already living, like they're being filmed for a reality show, and then they just happen to actually be filmed.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Mikkel? Do you think that she's just under the spell of a con man, or do you think they are just two equally grimy characters who just happen to have found each other and love conquers all?
Oh, equally grimy, for sure. We know, we've watched enough Housewives to know when someone is delusional and to know when someone is naive, like Alexis. Alexis isn't scheming. Alexis genuinely has this naivety or this slightly delusional quality. That means, and she's not a very good fighter or anything like that. Whereas there's something about Mikhail's way of turning everything being about like, we're just about love here, just about putting stuff. And that annoying thing of every time she sees someone like, and like, there's intent there. It's not just some kind of happy girl. And also watching her, like when she's caught out on the cheerleader thing, watching her try and justify like round in circles, which I could watch all day.
It's so funny. I wish I wrote it down. It's incredible. That whole scene where she goes to the reunion.
No, because what it was is that I was on the bench I just ran on, just did two or three games.
Yeah, but in Diane Diamond's book, it said that you weren't on the bench.
No, but then because I'm an alumni. So then they.
In the 80s or the 90s?
No, so I was. So, like I say, I was on the bench, but I wasn't a full cheerleader, but I just ran on. But the alumni wanted me to say.
But you said you were a cheerleader on the show.
Well, because the alumni said that they wanted me to say I was a cheerleader.
Uh-huh, but Terry Smith, who's the head of the alumni, said that you were never a cheerleader in the 80s or the 90s.
I don't know. It's just what the alumni wanted me to say.
Your own brother said that you're not a cheerleader. It just goes around and she's like, right, yeah. I know.
Yes,
it's
like, because...
Was I? I don't know.
And it's the same with the whole White House thing of... it's just incredible. And I could watch their brains, especially as someone who's a terrible liar. I'm just fascinated by someone's ability to just keep saying words without thinking until eventually basically being like, no, we have to go. We have to. Okay. Love.
I think for most of the show, there seems to be a narrative that everyone's spinning that before Mikkel met Tarek, she was like a nice, sweet lady and she's under his spell. But then in the aftermath of the White House business, Mikkel really takes a lead in driving whatever narrative that they have. And you get the sense that Tarek actually wants to hang around in Stacey's house and talk about it. And Mikkel's the one sort of ferrying him out and being the publicist.
Although, whoa, but we have to talk about Tarek throwing a glass of wine in Linda's face, which when she's telling that story, you're like, that must be exaggerated. But it's not. Right. And they just own it. And he's like, "Yeah, I was protecting my wife who has MS.
And everyone's like, you pushed your wife out of the way.
It's, and I think that's...
The whole MS business as well. It's like, oh my God, in the 11th hour, like another lie.
No, because I was doing work for charities for MS secretly. But it's secret.
And it's a great technique where in the reunion, she just cottons onto it, where as soon as they get anywhere with catching her out on a lie, she just immediately scrunches her face up and starts crying. In that whole business where she's like, "Kat, you made me cry. You made everybody cry." And she's like, "No, I didn't. Who did I make cry, Mikkel? Well, you made me cry. You made Stacey cry. No, I didn't cry." Like, "No, answer the question, Mikkel. Who did I make cry?" And then she scrunches up her face out of nowhere and then just starts crying. And Kat goes,
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am obsessed with the whole... So I was confused when at the first dinner that there's some kind of controversy over whether they snuck in at the back. I thought that was going to be the one because you'd told me.
I always Mandela effect it and merge the two events together. Yes.
So I already had that. So when that happened, I was like, oh, that must be the one. And I was like, oh, that's disappointing that you don't see more of the build up to it. It's just going to be hearsay. Mm-hmm. But the build up to the actual state dinner is just so brilliant and so
perfectly paced.
It's like perfectly paced, but also like really the woman doing her hair, in no world has she not been told to to see an invitation. She's really bad at it.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I want to see that invitation. Jeez.
Now I want to see that invitation.
Yeah.
You got Don't it. Forget. You're going to get it for me.
The physical invitation that you said that you had, remember?
Wow. This must be a really exclusive. How does one get invited to something like that?
Oh my God.
So I just love that whole section. And also I love the bit where Michaela's having the sari put on her. And she just keeps being like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, and that bit goes there. Wow. And it's like, she's just like endlessly surprised by how this sari works.
Yeah, she's like a child. Like, how are you endlessly fascinated and discovering all these little things?
Literally like seven times. And then yeah. She still sees the back and it's like, oh, wow.
With every safety pin, she's like, oh, and another. Wow. I love that she makes a point of telling the makeup artist as well that she used to work in the White House as a makeup artist, and it's nice for her to come back as a guest, and she wasn't sure whether it was appropriate to wear a sari or not, so she phoned up the social secretary, and they laughed and joked, and they loved the idea of her wearing a sari to the state dinner, and what a great idea it was, and how much fun she's going to be as a guest. And I think this instance is the bit where truly we break the fourth wall, because there's a lot of rough and ready camera footage. It's like guerrilla style footage as they're following Mikkel out of the salon as she's like rummaging through her bags in the back of her car trying to find this invitation. And like my heart starts racing watching it every time. Like my palms got sweaty. And then you hear the producer's voice off camera. Not only that, which is, I think, maybe one of the first times that we've ever heard a producer's voice mm-hmm. on these shows, but you can hear the producer actively trying to get the narrative back on track. And she talks to Mikkel like she's a child, where she's going, "Remember Mikkel, you know, the hairdresser? She asked to see the invite. That's why you were going outside. Do you remember? That's what you were looking for. So where is the invite, Mikkel?" And Mikkel's kind of acting like that wasn't the case. And then she says, What am I meant to be looking for?" It's very eerie and bizarre.
I don't know. I kind of read that differently. I read that like Mikkel and Tarek are the kind of people where it's so impossible to pin them down for like an answer or to get them to stay on track with what they're doing. And the producers must have just had a nightmare of going, "No, we don't need footage of you looking for a bra in the, but you were meant to be looking for the invitation." And it just feels like everything is so much fluff. It's like, "No, don't tell us another story about when you were on the phone."
No, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like a whirlwind of energy that's superfluous, that is meant to be kind of like smoke and mirrors and a big distraction. But they're just going, "Remember the invite. We don't care about the bra. We don't care, like, where is the invite?" And it's such a bizarre scene. Even if that was it, and then inevitably they then found the invite or whatever, you'd still go, this is not how a human being acts. They are so cool, calm, and collected throughout the whole thing. The stakes are so high. You're going to a dinner at the White House, and you've momentarily lost the invite.
It's amazing.
It's a bit like when Jen Shah gets arrested and you're just like, how are you not sweating more right now? She's like milling around in the beauty lab and laser parking lot, like saying goodbye to everyone, hugging. It's like, you got to get out of there, Jen, quick. The police are coming now. You just feel like everyone, the audience included, is more stressed out than the Salahis are. And the producer, again, they say, "You've lost the invite. You can't find it. Why aren't you tearing your hair out right now?" And then Tarek gives us a little guff about,
"You don't need an invite."
Yeah.
"To get into the White House. You don't need a physical invite. Come on."
Incredible. Incredible stuff.
And then that amazing bit when they arrive, when the woman says their name's not on it, but she's like, "If you just want to wait down there." And she's like, "We're early. How fun."
Yay.
"How fun. I thought we were going to be late, but we're early." It's just, it is like watching school kids lie about something. It's like, it's extraordinary. Like you say, it's just not how humans. It's my favorite kind of housewifery.
The audacity to pull that off with a camera crew, no less. It's like you are the most conspicuous looking guest. Like you're wearing a bright red sari.
In a sari.
Sticking out like a sore thumb. Just incredible. Like you cannot believe that they've got this caught on camera. Because yeah, like you say, when the gay in the limo is telling the first story about the Black Caucus dinner, you're like, oh God, that'll be it then. And you know, that's a shame we didn't get that caught on camera. But even then, the story is incredible where he says, basically, they were invited by the Salahis to go to this Black Caucus dinner. And they kept saying, "Oh, we're meeting some friends there and we're plus ones. That's why we don't have the invitation." And then they blagged their way through the first checkpoint in security. And then they snuck in through the side by following a busboy through a side door and like went in through the kitchen. It's so cartoony. And then suddenly they're inside and the Salahis are schmoozing around the room and sitting down at empty tables and pretending it's their place setting. And then security tap the Salahis on the shoulder and escort them out. And then amazingly, like 5 minutes later, the gays turn around and they're back and they've managed to like schmooze their way into the VIP section. It's incredible. I think we'll keep coming back to this word, but it is so shameless. The fact that after they crash the White House, they take photos, they take evidence, and then Mikkel posts it on Facebook. Again, it's such a great time capsule moment. I love it.
Exactly. It's such a time capsule moment for that to be your downfall. And even just the scene of them going through being like, "Oh, that's a good one." like picking their snacks.
Oh, and there's Diane Sawyer. Oh, she was great.
I would say like their obsession of, are we going to be able to take photos? And I love the bit in the reunion where she weirdly says it like it's a positive of being like, "And there's a verb named after us." And he's like, "Yeah, what does it mean?" And to crash. And then he's like, "Okay, what does that feel like?" And she's like, "Not very nice." And you're like, but you just said it like as if you were being like, "And we're also bringing out a line of merchandise," or whatever. Like it sounded like a positive.
Yeah.
It's just
to proudly sit on a reunion stage and say, "We're infamous."
It's just fantastic.
It would be like Camille at that one reunion going, I am officially America's most hated housewife, according to Us Weekly. And then Andy going, and how does that make you feel? And then Camille just going, not nice.
Not nice.
I will say, look, it's embarrassing for the White House, and it exposed some major flaws in their security system, obviously. But the way that the women talk about it, again, like they're politicians themselves, they're talking about it like Mikhail's going to like assassinate the president.
Of course, it's always the case with these shows, isn't it? That when someone does something bad, everyone's reaction often ends up actually taking away from they. If they treated it exactly as the situation it was, it'd be more powerful. But they hampered their own cause by, yeah, someone like Kat being like, and she doesn't understand that, you know, people have lost their actual jobs.
I actually had an invite to the Christmas party, and you actually get beautiful invitations. And thanks to Tarek and Mikhail's antics, I've had to fly my father out to go in my place.
Now Charles and I have broken up. So, but yes, having people like Linda there saying their country was under threat.
You can't help but laugh. I'm sorry.
However, it is also really funny watching that hearing where the answer to every question, they're just like, I've been advised by my lawyer under the Fifth Amendment to not answer that question. Right. They're like, are you here now? I've been advised by my lawyer under the...
It's like something from Veep. It's such good comedy.
And when they're asked about that and they're like, it's because we weren't... There were questions we could answer, but we weren't asked them. Yeah. I'm like, what questions?
If the questions were, are you a living, breathing person who's here right now and you still feel that you're legally bound to not answer that question, what are the questions that you can answer?
Well, they didn't ask the right questions. They've been like, are you a Libra?
Yeah, should hair salons be integrated? Again, it suddenly gets so meta where you can tell that this crashing the White House was not meant to be the season finale. It should have been. It's like a fantastic... If you were writing this as a script, it would be a great way of ending the show. But clearly it's thrown production completely off kilter. And everyone finds themselves in this weird stasis where they're technically still filming, but they're not filming the women doing their usual run-of-the-mill housewives activities. There's no big, flashy finale party. It suddenly doesn't feel appropriate to carry on production in a traditional sense. So it's just this endless lineup of scenes where all the women have been imprisoned in Stacey's home and they're just like watching these news reports and the hearings taking place on CNN. And it just really blurs the boundaries all of a sudden where they're technically still housewives and they're performing, but they've just been relegated to audience members just like us. And they're suddenly watching their fellow housewife on TV. It just all gets very mixed up and messy and murky.
It's also just very unsatisfying because even when they decide to have the Salahis over and Kat decides to be there, but they're not sort of well-versed enough as housewives to have a showdown. So instead, you just get Kat sort of sitting unable to bring herself to talk to them and then eventually leaving and being like, I just want to say before I go that you're two of the most appalling people I've ever met in my life, and I think you're absolutely disgusting, and I want nothing to do with you. I want nothing. I think you should be ashamed to be American. And Mikhail just sort of sat there like smiling. And I love that because a bit like old school New York and stuff like that, they haven't got to a place with housewives yet where it's playing up sort of fights for camera. There's something very organic about it, and I do enjoy it. They're so interesting, those older series.
Another reason why Stacey, I think, is a very undervalued player on Housewives is that she is actually the only housewife to correctly clock that the Salahis are nuts, but she also knows that we're filming a TV show and that they can't just exist in isolation and that someone needs to film with them. She's the only one to truly step up to the plate and share camera time with them. And even though Kat tries at the end, she doesn't have the TV savvy to be a good key player and have a dialogue with them. So the scene kind of goes nowhere and actually probably exacerbates their exit. And what Stacey's trying to do is lull the Salahis into a false sense of security. Kat's just like, no, I think it's unbelievable how we can just sit here and be fake, plastic, not fantastic. It's just bullshit. And it's like, cool, but also we need to do that in order to get them into this sense of security. So real props to Stacey for doing that.
And also whether she knew it or not, but to do her work as a realtor with them is so fantastic in terms of highlighting
their, let's talk about
like
that.
Absolute bullshittery. And she's just like the perfect person for that because she's so level-headed and she's so straight with them about, like, she really treats it as like a proper business meeting. She's not blowing smoke up their ass. And so it just serves to highlight their complete nonsense in a way that's so glorious. And if she did have a producer hat on, then massive props to her.
To have to sit there and be like, okay, so what is your price range? And from Miguel to go anywhere between 100K,
like 100,000 and like 12 million.
20 million. Outrageous. Okay. That's another way in which Miguel I find to be a bit Danielle Staub-esque, because you could have just let her sit back and dine off of her infamy with Tarek for the whole season. But in fairness to her, every episode she's got a little adventure cooking. She's got a little mini storyline. So whether it be her and Tarek looking for their house, this amazing scene, it's like my favorite scene ever, where she's this goes to the reunion for the Washington Redskins cheerleaders. And it's honestly like something from a Christopher Guest documentary. Like, it's so funny. In fairness to her, she does seem to know everyone because she's going around hugging people, but she's also woefully out of her depth and doesn't have a clue what's going on. It's like everyone seems to know the routine apart from her. She's literally about three moves behind everyone else.
It's like me and every movement call.
I did my first movement call this week.
Oh my God, no.
And I felt like, Mikkel, I was really proud of myself. So I've never been in that situation before, and I kind of wanted to be cut in the first round. I thought it'd be really funny for me to like do this movement call, and then I was imagining the monitor being like, okay, thank you everyone for coming in. If you hear your name read out, that's all we need for today. If you don't, we'd like you to stick around. Okay, James Evans. And I got my way through the first round, which, thank God, because it is humiliating to be cut straight away. And then I did the dance call. I was actually the last name to be called as well. So in my delusional mind, I was like, that means that I'm the favorite. Because what they've done is they have like all the headshots and resumes, and they've gone, okay, so we definitely want him, and then like plop me down first. And then that means I'm at the bottom of the pile, which then means I'm the last name to be called.
I love thinking like this.
And then like I went into the dance thing, and they cut it from 15 people to 8 people, and we were all paired up to do this ballroom dance. And I was the only one who was in a male-male pairing. And again, in my delusional mind, I'm like, that means they think I'm good. And I had to do the female part. So I was like, that means they think I'm good. And the way, Ellie, I was being flung up in the air, I was doing high kicks, bam! I felt like a fucking princess. I felt like the belle of the ball. And this poor bastard, Neil, he had chronic back pain, but he didn't want to tell anyone. So he was like, can we just take a break for a second? I'm in a lot of pain. I'm like, Neil, you need to step your pussy up, because I'm gonna nail this. I felt incredible, and I was like, I'm a dancer. I've never realized. For those of you who don't know, I'm a single threat. In my Instagram bio, it says two things. One is the lesser half of the Housewives archives, and the second thing I say is very much a single threat. But I don't know. I think that, I don't know.
Maybe one and a half.
One and a half. I think there's something there. I then got cut after that round. But again, in my delusional mind, because, you know, they say the whole perfunctory thing of, guys, don't read into this. It just means that you've given us all we need to see today. I'm like, I did.
Yeah. I will not be reading into this.
I will be getting a direct offer after this.
I had that about 2 months ago. I went in for finals for a show where, when I got there, everyone else had been there all morning reading with each other in different pairings. And when I got there, they were like, oh, Ellie, rather than make you stay around after the movement call, why don't you just read with, you know, Mark or whatever, this person here, and then do the movement call, that way you can go. And in my head, I was like, well, if they've had everyone else reading in different pairings all morning, I must have it if they only need to see me read with one person. And it must be that they're pretty sure this guy is going to be the guy, and they're like, let's just get him to read with Ellie.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it wouldn't be fair. Turns out, life's not fair.
I love the thinking, the mental gymnastics we do.
And I did not. It was just, they gave me such a look of, you can just read with so and so, where it was like, oh, I see, because I'm already in.
I know.
Because I've got it.
In the movement call, we had to do one thing. It was like a little bit we had to do. And then I did it. And then one of the people I saw out of my peripheral vision, they kind of like slinked up to me and they whispered, can you just like do a bit more, please? Just give us a bit more to look at. And in my head, I was like, okay. Wink, wink. You want a bit more? Oh, I see. Can I like be better?
You want a little bit more?
I could give you a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Okay.
Painful.
But yeah, so basically we've all had that fear of being at a dance call where we're the shittest one there and we don't know what we're doing. To then have a camera crew documenting it is so fucking humiliating. Mm. Again, shameless. Another little adventure that they go on is that they decide to write a book, and then they meet up with a ghostwriter. And it's, again, such a weird AI uncanny valley scene where they clearly want to tell their story about the vineyard, but tell it from their warped perspective.
Oh my God, yeah, of course.
And they're asking these really weird basic questions to the writer where they're like, so how would you tell the story? And then the guy gives these long rambling answers, which are also equally basic, but as if it's like really innovative. And he's like, well, traditionally, I would start at the beginning, usually with the title of the book. And then I would write chapter one and then start at the beginning of the story and then work through to the end. And then I would write the end. And then Mikhail's like, wow.
Mm. Oh. Mm. I love when he suggests that he might have some input into it so that it could be like co-written altogether. And he's like 80-20. And they're like, like 1585. Like that makes a, it's ghost written anyway. It's 100 him.
Also, you're not going to get any revenue, sir. They're going to steal all of the money. This is pointless even debating the number with them. Oh. Save yourself, sir. The vineyard scene is so fun. I know you kind of set the scene with having the security outside. And in my head, the mum is like directly outside the gates. I don't think that is the case, but there's local media there and everything. But again, it's such a bold-faced lie where they make out that it's this luscious, verdant oasis. It's literally called Oasis. And then you get there and it's the middle of January.
The most shriveled.
There's no grapes growing at all. It's cold, desolate, barren.
It's the epitome of barren. And like they say, the grapes in the buckets have got to be shot-bought because there is not one grape on one of those vines.
Like, they're like seedless grapes. And it's just so embarrassing because everyone immediately clocks it as well. And then they're kind of like going along with it. And again, a cat I find quite frustrating. I think actually I really did a 180 from the, I remember the very first time I watched DC, hilariously, it's one of the very first Real Housewives I ever watched when I was on holiday in America. And I remember thinking, I quite like Kat. She's kind of straightforward and no bullshit. And actually on this watch, I'm thinking, you're really insufferable.
She is insufferable.
Big old racist for a start. But I think she's kind of what I imagine LVP haters think LVP is.
Yeah.
When they say that like Lisa uses British humor as a guise for being rude, I want to go stop right there and then sit him down and show them a montage of Kat acting like a complete ass all in the name of British humor. Like, I think she has this cute ab fab thing going on and it's just her walking around constantly being like, well, this is a bollocks, darling.
Also, I just hate her whole thing that she's written a book where she's like, the last thing I want is for it to come across sort of Sex and the City, because that's just not who I am at all. Cut to her holding like 10 shopping bags in a photo shoot on the phone with sunglasses. I'm like, so who are you?
On her little BlackBerry. She kind of reminds me of, you know, when you're at a party or something and it's not very good, and then you clock eyes with someone from across the room and you sort of give an eye roll to each other, and then you're like, oh, okay. And then you go over to them and you sort of bond over how rubbish the party is. And they've kind of, they're almost like a side character in a Richard Curtis movie where they're kind of a bit, tell it like it is, no bullshit, darling. And in the moment, you're like, okay, this is quite fun and I can have a bitch and a moan. But then actually, as the conversation goes on, you actually just realize they're a miserable person and they're just negative about everything. And it feels a bit like that in this scene at Oasis, where she's going around with the gay complaining about how transparently fake everything is here. But there also does, again, need to be an element of going along with it. You want to lull the Salahis and make them think that they're laying out the red carpet.
We want to watch
see
the
how
mistakes.
Much more bullshit we can see. It's actually not fun to watch her being like,
God, what a load of fucking bullshit this is. No, I just don't want to be anywhere near these dreadful people. Like, no, I'm going to go home, darling, actually.
It just serves no purpose.
But it's fine because she leaves and then we get one of the greatest scenes of the series.
Oh my God, it's incredible. It's so out of nowhere.
I just really wasn't expecting it. And I love how strong Stacey and her husband's reaction. It's just incredible.
It was kind of a turn on.
And I still don't really know what happened. It was just the most bonkers.
So they're like laughing, joking. Everyone's got red wine lips. They're a few hours deep into the dinner. And then apropos of nothing, Tarek is like, well, it's a shame I have to bring this up because we had our car stolen and there was polo gear inside and the FBI were on the case and they found a Facebook post of Lolly saying it sure was fun stealing that car and going for a joyride. We hate the Salahis and their charity is stupid.
and everybody's gonna go to jail. It's just so out of nowhere, so obviously fake, but the fact that the FBI are involved,
so good.
It's so funny that Stacey gets involved and she's like, this is a devastating accusation. And Mikhail, for a moment, thinks that Stacey's agreeing with her. And Mikhail's like, it is devastating for the charity. And Stacey's like, no, it's, we don't care about the charity. And Mikhail's like, oh, I care about the charity.
Well, I care about the charity. Yeah, it's hello. And Mary's just like paralyzed crying because she's also really drunk. And so in her kind of drunken fog, all she's hearing is your daughter's going to go to jail. And she's like, what's happening?
Mary's a funny one because I actually don't think she's boring. And I found, obviously, she doesn't do a lot. And her big storyline is she has to change the lock on her closet because Lolly keeps stealing her clothes.
It's so boring.
But I find her... I don't think she's boring, or if she is, I don't find her boring either in a funny flop way like a Kathy Wakili or in an annoying way like a Gina Kirshenhiter. I just find her probably the most nondescript housewife ever. She's just so incredibly beige. She's like a very benign version of Ronnie Nagus, where she is constantly in a kind of like whiny, pilled out...
Fugue state.
And they also have a very similar look to them.
Yeah, she also looks like an American actress. I can't remember who. I mean, she looks a little bit like Stockard Channing when she was younger.
Yeah, I see that.
She has a really particular look where she always looks like a different person when her hair is straight.
She does.
She looks much better.
I also can't pin down her age. She kind of, some scenes, she looks incredibly young.
Exactly. And some scenes, she looks really puffy and like, it's just very strange. And like you say, it's like a complete non-person. She doesn't take a stand on anything. She's barely even like a Republican or a Democrat. She's just like the most non.
She's probably, I think for that reason, my pick for the most obscure housewife ever. She's just like a footnote on a forgotten city.
Yeah, it's a good one. Although I would say Linda as well, because Linda doesn't film with anyone. So Linda's literally only there to watch models walk about 5 feet. I'm sorry, it's the smallest space I've ever seen models have to walk for someone to watch their walk. It's got to be about 3 steps each time from the water cooler to the desk.
The fact that she's bragging about being the top modeling agency in DC, it's kind of like me saying I'm the most famous actor from my hometown of Churchtown. It's like, okay, cool. To be honest, in many ways, Linda's just, you know, your standard housewife in that she has a slightly slimy, untrustworthy presence that makes her a bit unnerving. She practices a myriad of different religions and spiritualities depending on the day for her own convenience.
And astrology.
She's nominally Republican, although she's dating Abong, and she feels like that gives her some clout and that it maybe gives her a pass to make some clueless comment about reverse racism or whatever. I will say about Mikhail, obviously, Mikhail's a very dangerous, dreadful person, but she's like the only housewife to not say something off color when it comes to race relations. So I know it's a very low bar to meet, but
very low bar. But yes, that's true. Well done.
Another reason why I like Stacey is that she did immediately clock Kat for being a big old racist. And that was just like a very strange run of episodes at the beginning where Kat's rudeness... I think what makes Kat palatable is when she finally is able to focus her rudeness on Mikhail and Tarek because they're such an easy target. But what's weird is in the beginning of the season, it's kind of just very scattergun. And it means we have these weird scenes where she goes to Stacey's aunt's homestyle cooking party and she's like visibly uncomfortable being in a house full of black people and makes these weird comments about how George W. Bush was a better president than Obama and like how she hates Tyra Banks. And it's just like a very weird beginning to start on. And then there's that moment where she's outside with the one gay and he kisses her and she makes a very off-color joke and uses some very old-fashioned terminology.
I think it's that. And I think what's difficult is I think she genuinely believes she's not, in terms of, I think it's very that trope of kind of the white women who are like, I don't see color.
Yeah.
But actually it's like, but you should see color, if that makes sense. You should see. I think she's very, in this kind of in the same way as Linda and probably the same way as Mary, they're very of that world of being like, we should all be the same. And it's like, that's not, it's not actually.
Yeah.
There's no introspection or like investigating of anything further than that. And she's definitely of the school of, I'm not a racist because I don't want to examine any of those things, which again, we have to remember, it was very of a time in which people didn't. And it's been a massive sort of call to arms the last 10 years in particular for white people in particular to examine their privilege and to understand that it's not enough to just be like, I really like everyone.
I voted for Obama.
See a difference. That it's like there's actual work to be done and things to have to sit with and to educate yourself better on. I think there's definitely what's so fascinating about what we were saying about watching old housewives shows where they don't have the self-awareness of how they come across now to the modern world is that it means you catch things like Kat just clearly being deeply uncomfortable in a culture or a cultural environment that she doesn't understand or that doesn't fit with her. She basically is only comfortable if she's with a particular kind of gay where she feels she can be bitchy and that feels like it allows her to be like, see, I'm if anyone who knows me, I've just got the best sense of humor ever. And that thing of, it's more complicated than that. And she doesn't want to interrogate that any further.
It's in another instance in which DC is incredibly ahead of its time, because I can't think of any show that would have been airing in 2010, scripted or reality, that has a character in the form of Stacey who actually articulates microaggressions.
That's it, exactly.
And introduces that to a white audience.
It's exactly that.
And I think she actually does very good work of making it very clear how she feels about Kat, and she thinks that she holds problematic views without saying it outright.
Exactly. And I think it is really interesting to watch it with today's eye. And it is like fascinating how quickly when Kat with Erica, who don't get me wrong, they're allowed to fall out and they're allowed to have different personality types, but Kat does so quickly fall back on this thing of being like, she's just really aggressive.
Yeah.
And actually Erica's not, she clearly doesn't like Kat and she is giving back what Kat is giving. But the one thing she's not is aggressive.
Kat is all bark and no bite. She's actually the worst kind of person who can dish it out, but she can't take it. It's actually shameful, utterly shameful that Kat got so easily gagged, not once, but twice, by the most random supporting characters in Stacey's obnoxious friend, Erica, and also Mikkel's assistant. And all Mikkel's assistant said was like, it's better than being bitchy all the time. And Kat just didn't have anything to say back to that. She wouldn't last 5 minutes on the friend. But I did find it interesting how Erica, look, she's very heavy-handed, and I think coming in and immediately being like, there's the mean girl, is annoying, but I think the way the scene was played felt very one-sided in that Kat was just a straight-up victim, and I think it would play very differently today. Another thing that annoys me with Kat is that as an English person who lives in America, I can't stand other English people who live here who constantly make their Englishness their personality, where they go around, she loudly complains about America and Americans all the time, where it's like, don't be here then. Like, fuck off, go home. Every talking head, it's her saying something like,
so yeah, I find Americans much more polite and fake. And we Brits, we just sort of say it like it is from time to time, you know, and we don't sugarcoat things.
And it's like, speak for yourself. I tell white lies all the time. And like everything that comes out of my mouth is sugarcoated. And then when Andy's like, oh, I thought it was different in that Americans are loud and say it like it is and the Brits are polite. And then she's like, well, I don't know what kind of Brits you've been hanging out with, Andy, but I can just say that we're very straightforward. She's a ridiculous woman.
Shall I take us out as Kat?
Yeah.
I mean, I brought us in as Kat, but I've been quite inspired by, I think your accent's probably been a bit better. Although I think yours goes into Lisa Vanderpump in the ASMR video.
She does defend you, Carl. She does defend you. Carl is absolutely not a racist. I think...
Any thoughts on what you want to talk about next week?
Well, do you have any burning desire to do anyone?
Gina and Emily?
Okay.
Or?
It's going to be short and sweet.
I haven't watched New New York. I could watch New...
I haven't been watching New New York either.
Should we... Maybe let's do that. We should watch... I think maybe we should watch some New New York and say what we think.
Okay.
Okay.
Dig us out.
Thank you, sir. I fucked it up already.
I want to do it now. I think I'm a better Kat.
Give me a chance. And then you can jump over. No, let me. I'll start, and then you can correct me. Okay. Thank you so much for. Oh, she's becoming a bit like she's having a stroke. No, because now I'm just doing an impression of your impression. Thank you so much for tuning into Real Housewives Archives. If you enjoy the show, then feel free to give us a review or
tell your friends, because that really helps us. And I suppose we'll talk to you next week.
Beautiful.
Go on, do a better bit.
Thank you all for joining us on the Housewives Archives. If you enjoyed this bollocks that you heard today, then just leave a message and click subscribe. And just remember, we're here for a good time, not a long time. And spread some word to your friends who might enjoy what we've said today. And have a good one.
From time to time.
From time to time.
What a way to put me in my place.
No.
Bring back Carlton.
Really?
Really?